I have been editing tapes.
Cutting and sticking?
Lots of editing, lots and lots of editing, and you need to forget everything I said in the previous episode you may or may not have listened to. If you'd like to go back and listen to that episode and then immediately forget everything I said,
okay,
that would be great.
So friendship with T-Rex is ended.
Yes, yes. My new best friend is now VHS, which is an excellent project that was mentioned to me by someone at work. When I mentioned T-Rex to them, they said, you should use VHS instead.
So this isn't VHS like when I used to send my high scores off to GameCube magazines by plugging my GameCube into a VHS recorder?
No,
okay.
It is not like that. But some of the terminology is reminiscent of that. So VHS is a recording application for recording terminal output.
Mm-hmm.
Same as last time, I want to record some terminal output and I want to preserve it in GIF format or some other format, and VHS does this. And the way it does it is you create a tape file, and a tape file is essentially a script, and there's configuration in there, and there's the commands that you want it to run in there, and things like sleep delays and any special key presses you want to press, you put in there as a script. And the cool thing about that is you can just run it over and over again and get the same output, in theory, depending upon the application that you're running, of course, and the prevailing conditions and so on. But you can run it, and then if you don't like the output, you can tweak something and run it again. It's not like ASCII Cinema or some of the others where you start a recording and then you type stuff or you paste stuff into the terminal.
Right.
It's all fully automated, which I really like. And I know is tickling Martin a little bit there as soon as I talk about automation, because we know what he's like. But there's two ways you can create these tape files. One is you can just type VHS record, and then you get the opportunity to run your commands like you would in ASCII Cinema or any of the others. And then when you exit, it creates a tape file. And then you can run VHS and point it at a tape file, and it will then run those commands in the background. And at the end, you get an animated GIF of whatever the commands were that you put in. Or you can manually create the tape file from scratch if you know the format of the file, which is well documented. There's lots of examples in the GitHub README. And you just put in all the commands that you want to do and all the settings and everything. Run VHS with that tape file and out pops a GIF. It's great.
So when you spoke about T-Rex, you had automated it and you had it producing GIFs and MP4s.
Yes, what a gigantic waste of time that was. Yes.
Why did you get rid of it and replace it with VHS?
Two reasons. One, T-Rex has quite a low frame rate. I think I mentioned this last time that it's only like 4 frames a second or something. And VHS has the potential to go higher than that, depending upon your system resources and how high a resolution the window you want to generate. And this is the other interesting thing. The way T-Rex works is it records the actual, I was going to say physical window, but it's not physical, is it? It records the window that you see on the screen as it appears, whereas VHS does everything in the background. You don't actually see the commands being executed.
Ah.
It tells you what it's doing. It tells you, I'm going to run this, now I'm going to run that, now I'm going to sleep for 10 seconds, and then I'm going to run this. But you don't actually see the commands executing until the very end when you open the GIF or MP4 or WebM. It supports all three of those. So you could do one of them or you could do all three. You can also have VHS just spit out all the frames, all the individual images, and then you can like combine them together using whatever tools you want to.
Nice. So if it puts the animation together without manipulating any screen capture, does this mean that it works on Wayland for us there Linux users?
I would imagine so. I haven't actually tried it on Wayland. I've only been using it on an X11 session. So I haven't actually tried that. That would be worth looking into. I think the way it works is a browser engine in the background, and it actually runs. I think this is how it works. I haven't actually looked too deeply into this, but I saw a bunch of browser processes running and I was like, what? So I think it does something. And I suspect part of that is because it's very configurable in the look and feel of what you want. And that's obviously very easy to do with like style sheets and stuff. You can configure the font, you can configure the colors. It's got a whole theming thing where it's got all the Capuchin color schemes, the themes. It's got an Ubuntu theme, so it looks kind of purple on the background. And you know, so you can make the terminal look like whatever you want it to look like. And you can make the prompt look like whatever. It's very configurable. And so I started using that when I was making the slides for All Things Open. So at the end of last week's show, I said, so if you want to know how it was made, and you know, come by the stand at All Things Open and I'll have made those videos with T-Rex. Well, no, I made them with VHS because it was just so much easier to just rerun the script and it would generally produce the same thing every time. Now, there are some caveats to that because a lot of the tools that I'm using are requiring the network and downloading big Docker images and, you know, downloading big files. And so it can be somewhat dependent. And so sometimes the programs take longer because they just take longer naturally as part of their function. But that means if you hardwire timings in the script file and say, run this command, then sleep for 20 seconds, and it takes longer than 20 seconds, then the recording cuts off part of that command, which is a little bit frustrating. Whereas all the other recording tools that I'm aware of will just record until that command finishes, but VHS doesn't. And there is a known issue that it's all timing based and it doesn't, you know, just stop when the command stops. And it's a like feature request that someone has had. And that's really the only main flaw with it is the fact that you have to fiddle with the timings a little bit. So I wrote a script and I wrapped it in this script so that I could run the two or three commands that I wanted to run and time them and count how many seconds they take to run. So with the prevailing conditions with the network as it is right now, I could then craft the four or five lines of the tape file with the command and then the right amount of sleep, which gets it like roughly right most of the time, which helped, I think. But once I've got the tape file created, I can manually edit that. It's just a plain text file. It's not hard. It's not YAML or TOML or anything weird. It's just a plain text file. And it's pretty easy to understand. And like I said, their README has loads of documentation. And so the net result was today I put out a video on our company channel, which was me talking through, you know, how to use Sift and Gripe in 1 minute. And I just used VHS to record at full HD, 1920 by 1080. I think I did it at like 25 frames a second, which looks okay. And the recording looks good, I think. And I'm quite pleased with it. I might try some different themes another time or try a different font or something to like mix it up a little bit. But basically, it works and I'm really pleased with it.
Excellent. So if I understand this correctly, what you're doing is you're using VHS to create the here's a command running and all of the output, which you're then narrating rather than actually monkeying around on a keyboard and making typos and all the rest of it.
So for the videos, yeah, I'm creating these MP4s. So it can create GIFs, MP4s and WebPs. And I'm making VHS create MP4 videos. And so I created like three or four of those. And then I used a video editor, DaVinci Resolve, to stitch them together and then speed up some parts of it and slow down some parts of it so that it was readable on the screen. And then once I got 1 minute of video done, I then talked through my script and then put that on top of the video that I already had. So I didn't do any audio while the commands were running. I got the video nailed, like with the right pacing or whatever you want to call it, and the speeding up and slowing down. And once I got the video done, then I did the 1 minute of talking into a microphone and just attached that on the top and put myself in a little circle in the corner of the screen, all using DaVinci. And I was really impressed at how quickly I could crank out a video. Once I got past the recording all the videos part, the audio bit was like, it was 1 minute of audio. So it's not a lot to record because it was only a 1 minute video, but it worked really well.
While I was at OddCamp, I decided to do a lightning talk, but I hadn't written a talk when I got to OddCamp, so I had to come up with one more or less on the fly. Fortunately, on the train up to OddCamp, Martin told me about something, and it's called MARP, M-A-R-P.
What does that stand for?
That stands for Markdown Presentations.
Ah.
So the way I typically write a presentation is I'll open up a text file and I'll basically hammer out a load of bullet points in Markdown. Then I'll open up some sort of presentation package and separate them out and copy bits into different slides, and then realize I don't want the text on the slides. I actually want them in speaker notes, and then go and find images and get them into each slide that matches what I'm talking about. But the way MARP works is you just have a Markdown file, which is your entire slide deck. And for me, it kind of cuts out a big chunk of my workflow, because all I need to do is create my list of notes, and then I divide them into slides. And from there, if I want, I'm done. I can just tell MARP to build that into a presentation, and it can build it as an actual like PowerPoint file, or as a PDF, or as an HTML file where it does it with JavaScript. Or what I prefer doing is, if you put that bit of Markdown in HTML comment tags, they become the speaker notes for that slide.
Hang on. I need to rewind. I'm losing track of this. So you create one Markdown file,
yeah,
that covers multiple slides.
Yes.
And so one slide might be a few bullet points, and then the next one might have a title and a few bullet points, or yeah, just one big word or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you're saying if you put the same Markdown or different like text in an HTML comment in the Markdown,
yeah,
it doesn't render on the slide.
Exactly. So right, all you do is you put the chevron exclamation mark dash dash like you're doing an HTML comment, and then whatever Markdown you put in that chunk is the speaker notes for that slide.
Right.
And you delineate each slide using a Markdown ruler. So
exactly, like
five dashes.
Yeah. So you just sort of separate it like you'd separate a document in a YAML file, for example. Each slide is a separate section of the Markdown.
Got it. How do you see the notes? Can you see the notes? Like, does it have like a presenter mode or something?
It does. So I haven't tried it. Oh. I assume that it just works in PowerPoint the way it would if you'd built it in PowerPoint. But in...
Oh, because you can export to yes, other formats.
Yes. Right. But in the HTML view, what happens is you open the HTML file it gives you, and then it has a little bar of presenter controls, one of which is presenter view. Then that opens a second browser window.
Nice.
With the speaker notes in, and the two are linked. So as you advance in one, the other window advances to the next slide.
Nice.
Yeah. I have used the speaker version of MARP, and it's exactly like if you've ever used presenter mode in Google Present, or whatever it's called, Google Slides.
Yeah.
You get one window, which is for you, with the preview of the next slide and a clock and a timer and forwards and backward controls and all the rest of it. And then you get another, which you put on the screen that goes out to the auditorium.
So when you gave this presentation at OggCamp, which way did you present it?
So interestingly, just as I was sitting in the Lightning Talks session preparing to give my talk, my laptop decided not to turn on.
Oh.
Fortunately, I'd had the foresight to export my slides as HTML and upload them to my website. So all I did was log on to the lectern computer and open that up in the browser, and I did it as HTML.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, that's a really good idea, because then, you know, you can use them no matter what machine you're on, and
yeah,
as long as you remember the URL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I found MARP for pretty much exactly the same reason that Mark just identified, which is I start all of my writing in a Markdown file, and then at some point it gets lifted into some other platform. And for slides, it always feels clunky and awful. So I loved the fact that I could just write in Markdown, and then that was my presentation, with a little bit of front matter and a little bit of formatting.
Hmm.
Do you have any pictures in there at all?
Yes. So I've only spoken about text so far, but if anyone saw my Lightning Talk at OggCamp, there was no actual sort of typed text on the slides. And this is one of the things I really like about this compared to other HTML or Markdown presenting tools that I've used before. So Markdown already has a way of adding images, but MARP adds in a few little utilities. So when you add your image tag in the Markdown, you can add sort of like class names to it, which control how it displays. If you want to display a background image, which is the background of the whole slide, you just say background, and then whether you want it tiled or centered or whatever. And then if you want it just as a sort of foreground image, you can also add effects to it. So what I wanted to do in my presentation was have like a full screenshot of a web page, and then I wanted to highlight part of the text on that page. So I would have the whole screenshot as the background image of the slide, and then I displayed the sort of pull quote, if you like, with a drop shadow. So it displayed sort of bigger in front of the web page, and that worked exactly how I wanted it with very little fuss from the markdown point of view.
Yeah, I was able to do something similar in slides I created. I had screenshots of an app, and I put the screenshots in as basically full slide images, and then was just able to have MARP add drop shadows to them, and it made them look really great.
It does look really good.
The other thing I like about MARP is I've been thinking about using it for open source projects where you can create a presentation for the project in this format. And because it's all just text, it can be translated with GetText. So you could create a set of slides and mark them up with GetText. And then you have then some collateral that somebody else could come in and then translate that, just those strings, to their own language and give a common repeatable presentation in a different language at a different event.
So you had images in there. Can it support like any other kind of media? Like, could I stick, I don't know, GIFs of terminal output or MP4s or like something? Is it just like whatever the browser supports, or is there a limited set of tags that MARP supports?
In general, with Markdown, if there's not a Markdown way of doing something, if you just stick HTML tags in there, it tends to work. So I don't know how that would work if you exported it to PowerPoint, but I imagine within the HTML itself, it would work. In terms of actually editing this and seeing how things look, there's a really good extension for VS Code or Codeium, which gives you a pane on the right hand side where, as you're editing the text file in the middle, it gives you a live preview of each slide. So if you wanted to just try things out, that's a really nice way. And it is, yeah, it's like instant preview, just like if you had a markdown and an instant preview, but it splits into the slides.
Oh, so it's actually MARP specific.
Yes.
For VS
yes.
Code. Nice.
It's very good. I like it a lot, and I will be doing all of my presentations like this from now on.
I guess this is a good way to be able to share them as well, because you can check in a markdown file into GitHub a lot easier than sharing a PDF or a PowerPoint or a link to a Google Drive. I'm sure everyone's had the situation where you click a link to a bunch of slides, and then, you know, that employee leaves the company, and then suddenly nobody can access those slides anymore, and it's like gone forever.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, you could have it in a GitHub repository and then have a GitHub action that builds it into the presentation and publishes it to GitHub pages for you. So it's always there, rendered, and you could do pull requests to it and, you know, all the normal sort of Git markdown collaboration type stuff.
Nice.
I have been managing long-running processes, and I have been using a tool called Pew, and Pew is P in our rather disordered A to Z of modern Unix.
So obviously I have to say Pew, Hugh, Bynum, McGrew, Cuthbert, Dibble, Grub for the olds.
Damn, you got there before me.
So this is Pew. It's a portmanteau of process and queue.
Right.
Now, I found this because I keep being told that Tmux and Zellige are the productivity enhancements you need in your terminal, and I keep bouncing off them. I can't get going with either of them. I've never really used them. I've tried. I just feel they're too much. I have terminal windows. I have tiling terminal windows, and I also have tiling window managers with terminals in them. And I've never really felt the need to have like tiling within the terminal itself.
Right. Agreed.
I think the key thing is when you're SSH to a remote machine, I think that's where you win with Tmux and those kind of things, is if the machine is remote. If you've got a window manager on your machine, you could just use that.
So I agree completely, and that's kind of where Pew comes in, because what I do is I log into a remote machine, which is fast and powerful with lots of memory, to kick off long-running processes like encoding video or compiling large applications or whatever it might be. And there are ways to keep your SSH sessions open, you know, with Mosh and various other things, but I don't want to sit there and have it be on screen. I just want to kick something off and forget about it and then be told about it after the fact. So that's where Pew comes in. It's a command line tool, and it's for managing processes either sequentially or in parallel. So the way it works is you just type pu add and then the name of the command you want to run. And that command gets inserted into the queue of tasks that will run. And if there are none, it starts running. And it just goes into the background. Poof, it's gone.
Like a batch job overnight on the mainframe.
It is exactly like that, actually. It's exactly like that with a number of similar facilities. So you can, once you've added your process to the queue, you can use pu status to see what the state of the queue is. And then you can manipulate individual processes in the queue. So if you find out that the ID of your process that you've inserted into the queue is 13, you can then pu remove 13 and just yank that off the queue. There's a whole bunch of commands that you can use to manage the processes, but the ones I've been using most often are kill and follow. So kill is obvious. Follow is great. So you add your thing to the queue and then you pu follow and then the ID, and it just appears in the terminal as if you were running it normally. No mess, no anything. It's just you're just watching it and you hit Control C and it carries on running, but you're now back in the terminal.
Right. So this is avoiding having to like pipe the output to a file and then follow the file and forgetting right. Where the file is and forgetting to clean it up afterwards and things like that.
Yeah. Now, what I found particularly useful is you can say how many concurrent processes you want to run. So by default, it's one. So you've just got a queue of one process at a time, but you can change that on the fly. So sometimes when I'm encoding video, I know my video encoder can handle three or four of those at the same time. So I can ramp that queue up to four and kick the jobs up, and it will scale out that processing across four concurrent tasks. And the other thing you can do, and this is the thing I really love about it, is if you start a long-running job and then you have another long-running job you want to run that's more important, you can pause one of the processes, start a new one, and that will run to completion, and then you can resume a paused process after the fact.
You mentioned earlier being told about it when something finishes. Does it have a way of notifying, dare I say, via some sort of notification system?
It does. It has a very simple configuration file, and it has a callback feature. And the callback feature is how you dispatch completion status to something. So you could use notify desktop or notify send if you're running it locally, or, as I now have, and I know Mark has, we have our own notify servers. So in my case, I have it ping my notify server and I get a notify notification pushed to my phone when the long running process is complete.
And can you configure what it tells you, or is it just a thing Pew says this process is completed, it succeeded or failed? Can you get some output from the process sent to you with that as well?
It is a very rich set of fields that you can format and send through. So I get like the exit code, the time it ran for, a whole bunch of stuff you can pull out. So yes, it's actually very useful.
So I can imagine there are people shouting at their podcast player, you could do this with Tmux and Screen and NoHub and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Probably not the queue management so much, but, you know, you can background a job, you know, with Control Z and then foreground it again. And yeah, you can manually, like a human job control system, you can do that. And I imagine you don't gain a huge amount by using pu if you're already familiar with all those tools and you're already doing that. I was having trouble thinking of things that I would use this for, and then suddenly something jumped into my head, and I do have something that's quite resource intensive network-wise and CPU-wise, and I don't really want 1,000 of them running at the same time, but I often have a lot of them running, and they take a while, and I think I'm going to have a look at this, because this might actually help me to get a bunch of jobs done that otherwise I would just like kill the network and kill the CPU and none of them would end up running, right?
I can't remember if I've spoken about it before on the show, but I've got a script for doing sort of bulk DVD ripping if you've got a large collection And the way that that works is it scans what's on the DVD and then it builds up a load of handbrake commands in a queue of as many that are on the disc, and then it runs them. But then you have to wait for it to finish those before you can do the next one. Whereas now I can think, but I could use Pew. I could then add those commands to a queue and then do the next one. That's interesting.
And the author of Pew cites that exact use case as one of their motivations for creating this tool. So if you like the sound of Pew, it's available for Linux, macOS, and Windows, and you can find it in your package managers and in their GitHub releases for all the usual platforms and what have you.
What's it written in?
Can't remember. It's probably Go or Rust. I think it's Rust, actually. I think it's Rust.
I was hoping you'd say Bash.
No, it's Rust. And it's feature complete. So this isn't like new or shiny. They set out a whole bunch of goals and objectives, and everything that the author intended for this program to do, it now does. And I really like it, because you did mention that there's other ways you can, you know, manipulate all of this, but it's just one simple interface. And my only criticism is that Pew does not come off the end of my fingertips very quickly or easily. So I alias it to PQ, which I find much quicker to PQ add and PQ stop and all the rest of it.